Here's something to think about. According to research from the University of Michigan, the total annual precipitation in the Great Lakes region has increased by 14% over the last 60-plus years, and the amount of rainfall from our heaviest storms has grown by 35%. We're getting wetter around here, and the results, as you are likely aware, have been flooding in our communities and pollution in our waterways. The climate's changing, and our infrastructure struggle to adapt, but potential solutions are available. Are they affordable? And what are the real costs of continuing with our outdated and aging sewer systems? Join us, 1-800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is Joel Brummeyer. He's the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Joel, good to talk to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And I want to start just with an explanation for combined sewage systems. It's more than 40% of the United States combined sewage systems are found right here in the Midwest. Give us some idea of how they work and why they can be a problem.
Yeah, it's a technical term, but it's pretty simple, right? A combined sewage system is just a pipe that gathers everything from your house, from a business, off the street, when it rains, and puts it all into the same pipe. And eventually that water either goes to a place where it gets treated and discharged after it's been cleaned, or it gets dumped into a river or a lake because there's nowhere else to put it. And so combined sewer systems is a way a lot of the Midwest cities were built. And of course, we're still dealing with the consequences of that today.
And where do we find these combined sewer systems around the Great Lakes? Are they still very common?
They are. There are about 150 permitted combined sewer systems in the Great Lakes region. Now, not all of those have sewage overflows frequently. In fact, the number of overflows has reduced dramatically, especially over the last 20 years. But it's still a common practice in the Great Lakes region and in the Northeast.
Earlier this year, we spoke with Ashland Mayor Deb Lewis, who identified the city sewer system as one of her worries.
The sewer overflows have become a chronic problem in the last several years. Not frequent, but one is too many.
A chronic problem where one can be too many, Joel. What's the scope of this problem across the Midwest?
Well, combined sewer overflows, it used to be that it was just the default. When it rained, you would dump combined sewage into the water and be done with it, and hopefully people's basements wouldn't back up, right? Because these are all part of the same system. Today, what we're seeing is a lot of those smaller overflows have been reduced, but we're seeing that the systems, these massive systems that are built throughout Great Lakes cities, really can't keep up with the level of rainfall that's hitting the ground. And so remember, the combined sewers mean that whatever hits the ground when it rains goes into the same pipe as what's coming out of your house. The volume of water in some of these massive storms that we've seen, of course, record rainfalls in year after year in Wisconsin, the systems just can't keep up with it. And so what you end up with is maybe a lot of those smaller sewage overflows have been reduced or eliminated, but these systems can't cope with these massive record rainfalls. And you see big events, big dumping of combined sewage into Lake Michigan, or even as we just heard, Lake Superior in places where it really wasn't a huge problem until recently.
But the cost, Joel, sewage systems can take millions of dollars to update. On the other hand, who bears the financial burdens of sewage systems that haven't been updated and are failing?
Yeah, so, water infrastructure is the thing that you don't see because it's all buried, but it really is the circulatory system of a thriving community, right? So the cost to actually eliminate CSOs can be very high. The cost to virtually eliminate that, meaning eliminate all but a few, can be more reasonable. Getting those last couple of CSOs eliminated can be very expensive. Even though, for example, Milwaukee's sewage district has set the goal of zero CSOs, which I think is really laudable. The cost has historically, it started in the 70s. The federal government invested a lot in constructing these new sewage systems to manage this pollution, to dramatically reduce it, comply with the Clean Water Act. That grant money went away in the late 80s, and we've seen it come roaring back as of this year in the form of new federal investment in water infrastructure, the Federal Infrastructure Act. And that's actually pumping more new construction money into these systems. In that interim time, though, communities were on the hook for paying for these improvements. And so you had communities large and small, urban and rural, shelling out tens of millions, in some cases hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, to continue to rebuild their sewage systems. And frankly, that, you know, that fell on the backs of some communities and some people who couldn't afford it. And so we saw a lot of delays in the control of that pollution. And I'm glad to see the new federal investment coming in that's going to help a lot of these communities catch up to where we need to be for clean water.
Our guest, the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, Joel Brunmeier. And I'll ask you if you've noticed more rain where you live, and how long does the rain stick around in ditches on streets? Does your town or city sewer system constantly flood? And how does that affect your home, your basement? And are you worried about flooding and whether or not it'll get worse as time goes on? Join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. And Joel, as you lead this organization that advocates for the Great Lakes, when sewage systems overflow, how are the lakes affected?
Yeah, so there's some sort of short-term and long-term effects. Short-term, everybody sees the big plume of pollution going out into the lake or into your local river, and that means you can't swim. It means you might have a drinking water advisory, you know, for a day or two. You're probably not going to take a boat out. So there's impacts on that local recreation, the local economy that's supported by recreation when you have a local overflow. There are longer term impacts too, though. You know, for example, one of the biggest challenges, if maybe the biggest challenge in the Great Lakes right now, is with nutrient pollution that feeds these massive algae blooms. And so one source of nutrients, things like phosphorus and nitrogen, is actually sewage. And so that adds to the load of nutrients that are overloading parts of the Great Lakes, like Green Bay, like Lake Erie. So there are short and long-term effects from these combined sewer overflows. And I think that the bottom line is people rightly feel we can do better, right? We don't need to dump our waste, our sewage into the open water in 2022.
Joel Brunmeier, our guest, he is the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, and we are taking a look at the infrastructure beneath our feet, the federal infrastructure funding that makes available the opportunity to update into the 21st century. And if you have a question about what takes place beneath our feet and our infrastructure and what's next in the 21st century, join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we'll continue the conversation here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Sewer socialism? In the early 20th century, according to the Wisconsin Historical Society, when socialists in Milwaukee tried to respond to the pollution of the Industrial Revolution by supporting new sanitation systems and municipal water supplies, they were called sewer socialists, and it was not considered a compliment. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're looking at what it takes to build a 21st century sewer system with our guest, the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, Joel Brunmeier. And if you've got a question, join us at 1-800-642-1234. If you live near a lake or a river and you've seen this runoff, tell us how it's affected you. And Joel, as I understand it, one third of Milwaukee is currently serviced by a combined sewer system, CSO, as you referred to it. And as you also talk about, the city of Milwaukee is shooting for a goal of zero overflows into our waterways. As we start to look at solutions here, what approach is the city taking to combat overflows where they think they can reach that goal?
Yeah, I love that comment about the sewer socialism, and then there was the sewer wars in the 90s. And those scenarios played out in other cities in the Great Lakes, too, because as you said earlier, these are expensive projects. But if they are, one thing that's clear is that, you know, water is collective, right? We're all in this together, whatever your political stripes are. And so I have been impressed with some of the ways that Milwaukee has approached trying to solve this problem. You know, a couple of innovative things. One is they're actually buying and managing land in upper parts of watersheds, so further away from downtown Milwaukee, to enhance water quality and reduce the volume of water that's going into the rivers upstream, which helps address water quality and flood risk downstream, right? A really innovative approach. They're also looking at how they're bringing private financing into addressing building green infrastructure with community benefits. So green infrastructure, you know, instead of building pipes and big holes in the ground, green infrastructure kind of absorbs some of that rainfall before it even gets to the sewer system. So it creates more space within this combined sewer, that so it doesn't overflow into people's basements as quickly, doesn't overflow into the lake as quickly. And like, and that's all part of this idea that they could get to a zero CSO outcome, which is really cool.
Is green infrastructure, is this a sort of a shift in how we understand our infrastructure and our collective, where we're all in this together and we have to share this water? And if so, how does green infrastructure change the way you see our infrastructure, Joel?
Well, in a lot of Midwest cities, you can't use concrete and holes in the ground that are big enough to solve this problem. You've got to find a way to capture some of this water where it comes down on the ground. And that's where green infrastructure comes in. So I think that the thing about green infrastructure is that it allows water to come to hit the ground. And instead of going into a sewer system, it could support a growing wetland, or it could, you know, percolate into the groundwater instead of going into a pipe. These are solutions that need to be integrated into what I would call, you know, the more 20th century gray infrastructure approach. But we got to do so at a scale that's way beyond what we've been doing, right? So as we've discussed today, the rainfall coming and hitting Midwest cities is increasing dramatically. It's getting dumped in more extreme amounts. Our sewer systems, stormwater systems, aren't up to the task of dealing with that. And we're facing the reality of a changing climate. And that has effects way beyond sewer systems. But green infrastructure can actually provide a host of benefits to cities, to rural areas, that goes way beyond just absorbing water. And that's what makes it a good investment. We're hopeful that we see set-asides for investment in green infrastructure through a lot of these billions of infrastructure dollars that are coming to the states. And, you know, the state of Wisconsin is going to have a big role to play in making those decisions, along with local communities like Milwaukee.
Well, and let me ask you about some of the smaller communities around the Great Lakes and throughout Wisconsin. And we touched on the solutions Milwaukee's exploring. But Joel, the EPA says most towns with our combined sewer systems combined sewer problems have fewer than 10,000 people in. So as you look from a small town perspective, what can they do to climate proof their infrastructure?
Yeah, so affordability of solving this problem has been a huge issue for cities large and small. And so in rural, smaller communities, it can be very challenging to solve these problems in a way that's affordable for residents. And so it's really critical that the federal funding coming in to these places is geared toward dealing with that affordability problem, both in terms of getting construction grants out so communities can take on some of these innovative solutions. Like Milwaukee might be showing the way, but a community of 10,000 people, you know, may not have the resources to do that on their own. And so, you know, getting the funds in place so they can follow that example is one thing. Another is that, you know, EPA really, and then the states especially, really need to revise their approach to how they distribute funds. And so making sure that the funds go to the places where the need is greatest, where the affordability is lowest, and you're actually, you know, using these funds to intervene in cities and towns and rural areas and urban neighborhoods where, you know, ratepayers simply aren't going to be able to afford to pay the full cost of getting to clean water. And that's why, you know, we're all in this together. And it's great to see these problems starting to get solved, you know, across the Great Lakes region.
Let's go to your calls and questions now at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest is the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, Joel Brummeyer. And Jeff from Delafield, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards to tiling of farm fields. We see much greater use of the plastic tiles in almost every farm field now, and I believe that's to get the water off the fields faster. Isn't that counter to everything you're talking about in terms of having green infrastructure where the water can soak into the ground? And if so, why do we allow so much of that to go on? Thank you.
And thank you, Jeff. The plastic sheeting we see at farms, not something I remember seeing at farms as a kid. Joel, what impact does that have?
So tile drains on farms can be a hotline for pollution into our waters. And so it's true that they're there to get the water off as quickly as possible. If that water contains excess nutrients, phosphorus, nitrogen, which comes from chemical fertilizers and manure, it can feed these algae blooms, some of which can become toxic. So it's important that we do look at our whole watersheds, the whole area where the rain falls, as a single system, right? And so keeping dirty water out of our rivers, out of the lakes, is important no matter where you are. And so if it's critical to update agricultural practices, so the fertilizer that's being put on the ground isn't going into surface waters either, right? That's possible. There's practices and tools and techniques that we know how to do that. The challenge is that we've got to make sure that's being actually applied to land, across these big watersheds, and that we've got the right regulations and the right funding in place. And that can be a big challenge with farming.
Joel, what does, over the last couple of years, we've talked an awful lot about public health, but how does public health fit into our future of our sewer systems?
I think everybody's have heard a lot about, how we're tracking COVID, for example, through looking at pathogens, in sewer water, which is just a really innovative idea that I love to read about. Looking at the bigger picture, I see public health and lake health as being, joined at the hip, right? So combined sewer systems don't just put sewer water into Lake Michigan. They put it into people's homes. They put it into businesses. It causes, the flooding and property damage and that costs tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars when an extreme storm hits, right? So these are all aspects of public health. I think that the best way to a healthy Lake Michigan is to make sure that we're dealing with all aspects of how, people connect with water, and all the ways that they need to have healthy water in their lives every day. And so that means dealing with the whole system, right? Not just with the end of a pipe.
Joel, I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Joel Brummeyer is the president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Mental health professionals use a book called Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders to guide their assessments and treatments. Just ahead, we'll talk with two psychiatrists about what recent revisions to the book mean for people's everyday lives. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.